The last tower was the most difficult. We were handed a sheet in which the four corners of our crude computer problem solver were drawn in. We had to fill in the rest. In those days we had a contraption which we called Mickey Mouse ears. Its two ears like sound receivers we pointed in the direction of an aircraft and it picked up the sound. Then we had a long tube about 8 inches in diameter and 12 long. It was filled with lens, which had like a prism at both ends and two binocular type eyepieces in the center. We moved the apparatus to try to pick up an incoming aircraft. The data in turn was fed to a computer type problem solver. It had a pear-shaped cam around which a needle moved. This solved the problem by mathematics, logarithm, sines and cosines. The data was fed to our fuse setters on the 90mm guns and turned the guns toward the incoming aircraft. Crude but the best of its time, 1942. I easily drew in cams, wires, gears etc. connected the four corners in about 15 minutes. The instructor was watching me. I looked down pretending to study the drawing and check the wiring diagrams. The captain came over, looked over my shoulder, and in a few minutes he took my paper and said, "You are excused, soldier." He continued, "I don't know how you do it, but fine work." I answered, "Thank you, sir, but neither do I know how I do it, but it seems so easy." The next day at drill, I saw him talking to my tactical officer. After the drill, my tactical officer came up and said, "Soldier, from now on you will be the company guiding bearer." I joined the 90mm battalion at Camp Edwards, Massachusetts, but was quickly pulled out, and sent to intelligence school at Camp Ritchie. Promoted to first lieutenant and sent to England and joined British M19. I was given a top secret clearance and a crypto analysis clearance. I joined 5th Army in Italy and was in charge of security and cryptographic clearances and oversaw all of the equipment in the Rome area Allied Command headquarters. I personally guarded the plans for the invasion of South France and its ultra code secrets, and met Winston Churchill. I was ground command, and worked on our code telecon system. I was given eyes only access, at the NSC, of the White House. At the conclusion of my NSC tour, I was given command of a missile battalion. During my short tour, we went from tubes, to chassis, which could be easily changed, to cards and transistors. The data was fed to computers which contained oil-filled data pots. Radars had become wonders of efficiency and missiles were reaching a spectacular stage, all this during an 18-month period. Then I became Special Assistant to the Chief of Army Research and Development, Lieutenant General Arthur G. Trudeau. I became his chief confidant and investigator. One of the most interesting phases of my life was when the General and I sat for hours in his office discussing technical matters. If Edwin Teller could be called father of the H-bomb, General Trudeau could be called the father of the ballistic missile. Many of our most important developments began during his tour as Chief of Army Research and Development. Many will second and attest to my view and conclusion. He started Project Horizon, a military landing in the moon in 1959. I used to sit in the General's office and we had lengthy discussions. During one such session we discussed transistors and chips. During 1960, General Trudeau gave a speech in which he said that, during the last 50 years we had advanced more, scientifically, than the combined years since the known history of man. The General then said, "During one session, Phil, you told me that in Rome you felt that you had been programmed, and all of your plans succeeded. You never made a mistake and none of our soldiers were killed or installations damaged, which was almost a miracle. And you discussed this with Pope Paul. I often wonder, Phil, if we are not programmed." In front of us we had two chips. One brown and charred. He had previously shown me this and two men were present alongside. We had another chip. Brand new, shiny and enclosed in plastic. On the plastic in gold letters was written North American Rockwell. The General continued, "The transistor should have taken decades to evolve. The chip centuries. But, they are here in a short period of less than 5 years." He said, I am a religious man, Phil, but I have to wander. You and I see these wonders almost daily, but we accept them and go about our business. I answered, true, General, but as I look at these chips I have to wonder, in themselves they are out of this world. They will change many facets of our daily lives, but there is one thing that bothers me. Computers will develop to an advanced degree. They will make possible gadgets and new types of machines and control mechanisms, but they are and will be only machines. But what will happen when the greatest computer ever created and can think, pointed to Ray Head, the brain, with its power to store and analyze, integrates with this chip? I picked them up and held them. Will it be a blessing or a curse? The General took them. I see your point, Phil. Developments beyond our comprehension, spaceships, space travel, possibly at the speed of thought and mechanical fabrications controlled by our brain. However, Phil, not in our lifetime, but it will come and these chips are the beginning. We went about our business, ECMs, anti-missile missiles, smart bombs, radars, computers, new control methods, etc. Some time later, the General was on a trip. I often went in his office, pulled out proposals from industry and other studies and would work on them on the conference table. One cloudy day, I cleared the table and placed the two chips on the table. I kept staring at them. A violent thunder and lightning storm came up. I kept looking at the North American Space Division chip. It had a small open window with small wires, a copy of the old one. During each flash of lightning, I imagined some movement of the small wires, especially when I concentrated mentally on it. When I picked it up, the plastic seemed warm. I thought my imagination of something I wanted to see and happened. The storm passed and I put the chips in the cabinet. Later, I told the General the story and said, "Sir, I think it was my imagination and I wanted to believe it could happen. But, chips don't get warm." The General looked at me and said, "Perhaps yes, perhaps no, we are working on a mechanism or guidance device, brainwave controlled, which can control aircraft. Put your full story on paper and give it to me. No typing, just write." 25 years later, I went through the same ritual in which I used all my powers of concentration during a violent Florida storm on someone very small and dear to me. The last bolt of lightning and thunder was so violent that all the lights in the hospital went out. My trance broke, but the equipment connected to the baby accelerated. The end result was that something happened. Perhaps it was again my imagination and I wanted it to happen and so believe that it did. However, I will accept the end result. My beautiful, healthy, red-headed grandson was cured of his condition and what remained, he outgrew. New, I will reveal for the first time how leads, guidance material, and data from possibly extraterrestrial, was used in the development of serious undertakings, using the best of scientific minds and equipment and why this intelligence could not be released at the time. New headline. 9 clearances above top secret. During my military career at one time or another, I counted 9 clearances above top secret granted to me. These included cryptographic, satellites, code and intercept, special operational clearances and the eyes only category of special White House, NSC, matters. They made available to me all matters within the government which included UFO information. My colleagues of the NSC staff did not know of my special clearances. Only Jackson, my superior, and the President's special assistant and President Eisenhower, knew of the clearances. Later, I filled in Senator Strom Thurmond and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Honorable John R. McCormick. I was granted 3 operational clearances which could only evolve after granting of the other clearances. For example, 1 and 2 were granted after a lie detector test, 3, 4, 5 and 6 were what I call the Masonic ritual, 7, 8 and 9 followed. These clearances vary from time to time, change, are dropped or added to. Soon after, I was placed on the U.S. Army General Staff Corporation and wore the green General Staff Star emblem on my blouse or shirt pocket. The first and basic clearances were for data marked restricted, confidential and secret. After an FBI investigation forced the compilation of the Soviet shots in space with destroyed our satellites and wrote the reports on the Soviet anti-missile atomic tests in subspace. Details of these reports were entered into the system, but could not be reproduced, especially the added information of the increased UFO activity and the subsequent destruction by unknown forces of the Soviet complex where these tests originated. To this day, the destruction and subsequent loss of life of Soviet technicians is a mystery. We knew it long before the Soviet admitted the loss. I doubt that even of this late date if they could explain the destruction of the facility. With all the reports and evidence, we were never able to arrive at an ironclad conclusion. Strange ion emissions were detected from space just before the explosion and destruction. We often discussed if a similar fate awaited us if we detonated atomic bombs in space. We discovered that radiation effects from atomic weapons fired in space are far-reaching and extremely damaging to electronic devices and have almost immediate fatal effect on human life. We knew the dangers of unhindered radiation in the vacuum of space. Extensive studies had been done on the effects of radiation on a soldier, equipment and supplies in an atomic war. Perhaps the liberals in our government saved us, since we could not fire atomics into space because of the test treaty with the USSR. The Soviets detonated a monster bomb over the Pacific Ocean. It was reported to be 100 megatons, actually 60. It knocked out our communications in the Pacific. Again, intense UFO activity. The Soviets never fired another. Why? We should ask them. Since we have never detonated such a bomb, we do not have any data or the effects of this size weapon. Perhaps the EBIs, extraterrestrial biological entities, did. Although we knew of some of the effects, we do not know the actual data and findings. As explained to me by Major General Dale Smith of Strategic Air Command, we cannot scale up a 22 caliber shot to give us the effect of a 10,000 bomb. Neither can we scale up a small atomic blast to show us the effects of a 60 megaton blast. In Army R&D, I had the title of Chief of Foreign Technology Division. I received all reports on foreign technology, which included foreign beings and events, those not of this world. I often headed teams of US scientists, German scientist, von Braun's group, and US technicians. In the Foreign Technology Division, I set up what I called my nut file. Every wild-eyed inventor or theorist that came or wrote to us was listened to. The promising ones were explored. Most were nutty, but the effort was worth it. Because every so often we uncovered a gem. I was always the team chief and made all decisions. No one except the general knew of my clearances. It was thought that my being team chief resulted only from my closeness with the general as his special assistant. However, my authority did derive from his position as Chief of Army R&D. Industry soon learned that I was his special representative and my decisions stood. I received a piece of information that a group of industrialists in a northeast state were on the verge of a breakthrough. They claimed that they were on the verge of a beyond the state of the art in discovery. This was the alignment of atoms or molecules in steel. We knew that this has been done, but didn't know how it was done. We had a sample. A small piece. The report read it was found in the western US desert. Believed to be from an UFO, not conclusive. Under certain conditions it would light up. Although beyond our state-of-the-art alignment of atoms in a paper-thin sheet of steel, would give it such strength that it was beyond our imagination. It would make a spaceship light as a feather. But of such strength that it would be collision-proof and no debris in space could harm or even dent it. All our weapons would be obsolete. Radiation or cosmic rays could not penetrate the skin. However, a different alignment would allow the passing of cosmic rays or radiation and make possible a propulsion system of such force that space travel would be simplified, and at speeds beyond our comprehension. Another alignment, and still retaining its great strength, would make the steel or aluminium transparent. Conclusions for guidance made for Chief of US Army R&D were mainly from R&D laboratories. R&D equals research and development. There was strong evidence that molecules' atoms were aligned. When I briefed the general, his orders were, get your team together, go visit them. If there is any breakthrough in alignment, we will take it over and fund the project. This could be bigger than Los Alamos. I left the next day. At the conference I listened carefully. My team asked many questions. They showed us an iron bar and a tunnel-like apparatus which they claimed aligned the atoms. Their chief engineer explained the theory and process. That night after dinner, I asked the head German scientist to take a walk with me. I asked him, tell me your thoughts, Hans. His answers was, if what they say is true, I will have to unlearn everything I have ever learned and start over. He was surprised by my answer when I said, Hans, someday you may have to. He stopped walking and looked at me and said, I will remember what you said. The next morning I spoke for the first time and said, gentlemen, if you consent, we will pay all expenses and arrange for you to carry on your experiments at Lincoln Laboratories. If our lab recommends further experiments, we will fund the project. The tests were inconclusive, but we continued our quest into the mystery since we knew it was possible. This alignment of molecules atoms project was carried on to perfect the skin of the future spaceship. But, it was also important in a space suit or skin of a human. We felt that for prolonged space travel, the human skin atoms would need a different alignment to protect vital organs. This was possible, but the state of the art was beyond us. But we kept searching because the future of the Homo sapiens might be at stake. Some evidence came from the skin of some sort of being in a photograph sent to us, badly burnt and decomposed. Not 100% conclusive, although with many unknown biological factors. Scientifically and from a medical point of view, unexplainable. Subsequent reports of astronauts in space for prolonged periods showed we were not ready for space travel. New headline. Newspaper article. The Washington Post, July 25, 1992. Astronauts lost 25% of muscle mass. Shuttle test results surprise scientists. A space biology mission from last year aboard the shuttle Columbia, which used astronauts as guinea pigs, has revealed unexpectedly dramatic effects of weightlessness on the human body, researchers reported Friday. The effects included a severe loss of muscle tissue, unexpected blood pressure irregularities and reduced ability to burn stored fat for energy. The findings could mean that extended space travel will be more difficult for humans than previously thought, scientists said at a NASA briefing Friday, and only more biomedical research in orbit will resolve the question. Kenneth Radwin, a physiologist from the University of California, Irvine, reported a significant and dramatic reduction of 25% of the muscle mass in weight-bearing muscles such as calves and thighs. Muscle loss had been predicted, but not that much. Recovery time was also unexpectedly long. The crew had restored only half the muscle mass after being on the ground for a time equal to the flight, 9 days. The muscles also showed a decline in their ability to burn fat for energy, he said. This forced them to rely on carbohydrates, which the body has a limited capacity to store. As a result, future crews will need to increase their early intake of carbohydrates, he said. Columbia was the first U.S. biomedical flight since 1974, and the first in the world dedicated to comprehensive research on physiological changes in weightlessness. Twice while I was in command of missile units, the radar picked up and locked on objects traveling and accelerating over 3,000 miles per hour, once in New Mexico in 1957 and once in Germany in 1958. On both occasions, I was instructed to destroy the tape recordings and forget the incidents. However, I did not destroy the 1957 tape. During my R&D days, radio transmissions were recorded from outer space. They were organized and orderly. No, the disorganized space noise we tried to answer, but without success, and were never able to decode the transmissions or establish contact. Information came from the super-secret National Security Agency. Our conclusion on UFOs was that they existed. We had reports of objects from a mothership and we believe what was recovered were parts of sphere-type probes. Usually 4 or 5 of these came from every source. They are for protection and reconnaissance. Our radar images of formations probably are these probes surrounding 1 or 2 flying saucers. They dissolve in a transparent alignment of atoms. Our radar pass through, they disappear from our sight, and are gathered into the mothership and are realigned for space travel. We estimated that our judgment was 75% accurate, based on fact, 25% questionable. New headline. Roswell, fact or fancy? I was visited by 2 New Mexico State felice in my headquarters. They had arrested one of my sergeants. The road leading to Red Canyon was through a mountain range and was hilly, full of curves and treacherous. The sergeant had been drinking and decided he was going to push over with his car. All the road signs denoting curves, hills, speed limits, etc. I was told in case of an accident, and there was no highway sign, the state would be liable. In an agreement with the state, all soldiers arrested by civil authorities would be turned over to the military. I assured the state troopers that the sergeant would appear before the civil court, pay his fines and damages, then he would be dealt military justice. It was close to noon. I invited the 2 troopers to lunch and to arrange and witness a missile firing. They accepted. During the missile firing, I explained the function of my radars and explained the power could explode a flashbulb in the vicinity. I mentioned that the radars had locked on an object traveling over 3,000 miles an hour. They asked if it was a new UFO. I answered that I didn't know, but my tapes showed it was the size of a large aircraft. The conversation turned to the UFO crash of 1947. I told them I would like to tour site of the crash. They offered to be my guides. The subsequent tour, meeting with the sheriff's office, the newspaper editor, and the people was most convincing. Their presence as my guides opened up many doors. These were down-to-earth people and not prone to exaggeration. In every case I invited the people I talked to be my guest at lunch and witness a missile firing. Most accepted since my base was close by. I was convinced that a UFO had crashed in the vicinity and this fact had a profound influence on my future life and many of my actions and activities. New headline. Partial list of items from UFO crash at Roswell from eyewitnesses. A rare earth element used for coloring glass violet. Neodymium. Beams pieces that were present. Has strange hieroglyphic typewriting symbols across inner surface. Pink and purple. On each of the components boxes there would be scribbling, it was almost a pink color on sort of a brown woodlice background, like it was writing or symbols that explained what this was. You know what stainless steel is like, when you put heat on it. How it turned kind of purplish, with a kind of blue hue to it. That he saw a row of unrecognizable symbols, several inches high on metal devices. A lot of it had a lot of little members, I-beams, with symbols that we had to call them hieroglyphics because I could not interpret them, they could not be read, they were just symbols. The members that this was painted on, by the way, those symbols were pink and purple, lavender. Fiber optics, color transmitting fibers. No wiring, as we utilize, was found in the crashed craft at Roswell. However, a harness-type system was discovered. At first, it appeared to be a bundle of wires. They had broken loose from a type of control panel. The ends of the wires, about 12, which appeared to be frayed, were intermittently emitting bright colors. Upon examination it was found they were not wires, but appeared to be glass or transparent plastic tubes. They could not be broken or cut and thought to be a quartz-type composition. A conclusion was reached that through them was transmitted different electro or magnetic wavelengths which accounted for the various colors. A pulsing current was transmitted through the tubes. They gave the appearance of earthly fibers, so a descriptive term was applied: optical fibers. In reality they were optical tubes. This evolved into what is now known as fiber optics. The tubes led to a type of junction box, where certain fibers separated, and went to mechanism which acknowledged the color, wavelength, and would be activated. How this was done was not known. No clear definition was made of the power source, type of power, or how the message was carried. Fiber optics began its giant step forward, 1947 to 1968, almost 20 years after the fiber harness was found and analyzed. 1993. We know that what evolved, almost the whole future of communication revolves around the new technology that usurped waveguides. That technology is communication by means of light, waves traveling through transparent optical fibers, and which is now recognized as the best and most efficient known to man. Quote, if we knew it could be done, we could do it. Illuminatic. The craft inside was illuminated by a yellow-greenish light. The light appeared to emit from solid metal or possibly a variation of the atom alignment within the structure members of the craft. This was discovered early from small pieces. When a light was applied at one end, the whole piece would light up and glow. This was thought to be a variation of the fiber optic tubes. It is not known if the source of the yellow-greenish light or glow was ever found. Crash at Corona. In 1957, 1,171 sightings, from October to December, 701 sightings were attributed to Sputnik. My radars were accurate, I could not pick up Sputnik. I had to put a 12mxL2 if 90% angle on my RCAT and drones to get 1 square MTR, radar reflection, object east to west over 3,000 miles per hour. My radars were functioning and locked on, my tapes verified fact. I could even read altitude. In 1957, while in command of the Army's missile firing range at Red Canyon, New Mexico, part of the White Sands Proving Grounds, I came up against a most perplexing problem, which I was not competent to answer or solve. There had been much speculation that UFOs engage in time travel. I later discussed this with German scientists and they were of the opinion that this was fact. The UFO's terrific acceleration and flashy disappearance and appearance is caused by exit and entry into a time dimension. The theory has been put forth that there was a crash in the Roswell area in 1957. Some scientists claim that there may have been two saucers collide in 1947. One landed at Roswell. The debris from the second crash was found at the Brazel Ranch. An interesting version which I advance is that the two UFOs were entering our time zone at the same instant they collided. One went on to crash at Roswell, the other was damaged and debris fell into our time zone. It accelerated at terrific speed, exceeding its own limits, and fell, just west of Red Canyon, in the White Sands area, but it had gained 10 years, and crashed in 1957. I had picked up the trajectory on my radar screens, but did not report it since a few days before I had reported something traveling 3,000 miles per hour, and I was told to forget about it. I called White Sands and reported I had lost to RCAT, radio-controlled small target planes. They reported a trajectory, and it matched the one I had picked up earlier. I flew over the area the next day and saw something metallic and round on the ground at an angle. My RCATs were red. My pilot in the small army plane asked what I thought it was. I answered, possibly a booster from our missiles or a piece of an exploded missile. I wasn't too interested in UFOs at the time. I was known as a serious commander and a good intelligence officer, and did not care to get involved in such reporting. If I would have made an issue of the incident, I surely would have been ordered to forget it or be typed to cook. I was on orders to take command of a combat missile battalion going to Germany, but the problem was not going to go away. Even if I thought discretion was the better part of valor, I flew over the area again, in a few days and the site was swarming with activity. I have not seriously considered time or dimensional travel, which is another story. I have seen little evidence of this, but do not rule it out. This is the arena for the future. The Soviet-Russian connection. In 1947, Stalin called in his top scientists after the sensational news by the capture of a saucer that purportedly had crashed near Roswell. The scientists he called were, designer of Soviet military rockets and launchers, Sputnik in 1975.